sounded fun. By my on, there we go. So Dave didn't tell you that our special guest today is Mr. Jordan Merk. Kevin's been, yeah, you can do that. Wow. I mean, you're going to hurt Kevin's feelings. Kevin's just been really under the weather this week, and lots have been going on. They have a new grandson today. If it were me, there would be a picture pop up right now. Maybe he'll give us one of those next week. But Gavin Matthew was born this week. And anyway, we're giving Kevin a break. And Mr. Jordan Merk is going to give our message today. And I had the privilege of going in and listening to Jordan a few weeks ago. And we talked afterwards. And I was just really encouraged. Just strong, strong message, strong delivery. And just his passion for students and for God was just such a blessing to me. And I hope you look forward to hearing from him today. But I'm going to pray for him because I know the first time I stood here, I was about to throw up back there. So
I'm not going to throw up.
Okay, thanks. Let me pray for him. God, I thank you for Jordan. I thank you for the passion for your word and you that you've put in his heart. So God, would you just ease any nerves he might have? Open our hearts, God, that he might speak to us today. And God, would you just speak through him? In your name I pray.
Amen. Good morning, everybody. Like Melinda said, I am Jordan Merk. I am the Student Ministries Director here at High Point now. I've been here since June. It was June, right? It's been about 6 months now that I've been here. It's been awesome. Like, I was here at High Point before in a different role, and then we went out on our own for a while, and then we came back, and it's so cool to be back. Like, it's such an exciting thing for me to be able to spend a lot of time with your students. It's kind of a funny story why I'm standing here with you guys this morning. So on Friday, I was sitting in Santa Clara, California with my buddy. You guys know Steve Hendricks. Some of you guys know Steve Hendricks. I was sitting in Steve Hendricks' living room, and I got a phone call from Tara Mowreader, and she was like, "How do you feel about speaking in the adult service?" And I was like, "Yes." I was like, "Yeah, this sounds like a good idea." She couldn't see my face, obviously. And so get off the phone, and Steve's sitting there with me, and I'm like, I'm freaking out right now inside. I'm like, this is so scary. Like, the adults, they're old. They're judgmental. And I was like, I'm so nervous. Sorry if that offended you. I don't know, whatever. You email me later, okay? But I was sitting there with Steve, and I was like, man, they want me to speak for the adults. I was like, that's so scary. Like, I've never spoken for that many people before. I'm like, the adults are scary. And then I turned to Steve, and I'm like, I am an adult. I forgot. I spend so much time with you guys as students that I'm like, I totally forgot that I was an adult. I'm 25 years old, and I totally forgot. And so it worked out fine. I was totally happy to give Kevin a break. And just, I think it's so great when we can come together as a church family, especially this time of year in the Christmas season. Like, it's so great. We're going to have a lot more students in here in second service, but they're all sleeping right now. But I think it's so great that we can all come together and we can just be together as a church family. Speaking of that, by the way, like, part of me coming in here was I get to kind of have my own shameless plug. We were supposed to start our camp signups today in students, and so we're not going to have our student service. So I just wanted to take a little bit of time to tell you guys about our camp. And so we're having this winter camp. It's February 18th to the 20th. And if you have students or if you've heard of it before, if you've been before, we used to call it Summit, and this year we renamed it, and it's called Gather. We're all gathering together. See what we did there? We're tricky. We're coming together. We're going to a new camp. It has a new name. Camp is just, it's such a great time because, you know, we have all the games. We go crazy. We have dance party, and there's so much fun stuff that happens. But I think the really important thing about camp is that it just brings together our students in community. Like, they're stuck together for an entire weekend, and they build lasting memories, and they build lasting friendships, and then most of all, they get to know who Jesus is more, on a more intimate level. I'm really excited this year because one of my buddies, his name's Corey. He started a church down in Sumner. It's called the Rescue Church. And he's coming in to speak. And I am so excited that Corey is coming to speak to our students just because he's probably the most passionate person I've met when it comes to sharing the gospel. Like, he gets so emotional because he's so passionate about sharing the gospel with others. And so I just had to put that out there that we're starting signups today for our winter camp. And if you have a student, we'd love to have them come. I know it can be a little scary if they're shy or if they haven't been before, but we want to make sure that they come and that they have friends and that they can get to know who Jesus is more. So I just wanted to put that out there and let you guys know that we're kicking that off today. We're going to have a table set up, and you can go to hbstudents.com. That's how you can sign up. But we'll move on from there. That's my shameless plug. Thank you. But we're kicking off a new series today, which you guys technically aren't, but the students are, because we're in here. And we're calling it Elf Christmas. And I think you guys saw the Elf video, my favorite Christmas movie of all time. Basically, we're calling it Elf Christmas so that we have an excuse to show the movie Elf at church. But I'm serious. That's the only reason why. It has nothing else to do with the movie Elf other than I can show clips of it. But what we're doing over the next couple weeks in the students is we're just taking a look at some different aspects of Christmas. And specifically today, what I want to do for you guys is I want to talk about a couple of myths regarding the Christmas story. You know, we have in our minds this idea of this is exactly what happened in the Bible, in the Christmas story. And we have this idea in our mind, but the thing is that some of the things that we believe didn't actually happen the way that we think. And so what I want to do today is I kind of want to burst the bubble for you guys a little bit. I want to shatter the glass or the mirror or whatever it is. And I want to take a look at some different elements of the Christmas story and see that they may not have happened the way that we actually think that they happened. So December is Christmas season. Like, it finally feels like Christmas. You know, we set up our Christmas stuff a little bit before December, but for me personally, like, December is finally like, all right, it's Christmas, there's snow, Starbucks has red cups. Like, that's kind of the key that it's Christmas season. Like, Starbucks controls that, let's be honest. But I love it. You know, winter isn't my favorite season. I'm more of like an outdoors, like, summer person. But Christmas season, it's probably like my second favorite season. It's because we have so many different memories and so many different traditions that we do with my family, which my family's sitting right over there. Hi, Mom. Love you. By the way, I don't know what happened with the Huskies, Dad. I couldn't get phone service. I'm sorry. If anybody knows, just hold up like how many fingers the Huskies got ranked. Just let me know, and it'll be good. You guys don't have any idea what I'm talking about. Okay. Go Dogs. Anyways, there's a lot of Cougar fans in here. That's why. But we have a lot of traditions that we do as a family and that we did while we were growing up. Some of my favorite were, I remember the day after Thanksgiving is when my mom and dad would bring all of the Christmas decorations down from the attic. And they still do that. And my mom goes crazy. And I can kind of, not, oh, that sounded bad. Sorry, Mom. My mom goes crazy for Christmas. And that she decorates our house. And the only way I could equate it is that it's kind of like Christmas threw up in our house. Like, that's what it looks like. In a good way. In a good way. If you want to, you should ask my mom if you can come over and see our house, because it's awesome. Everything is decked out in Christmas. But that's one of my favorite Christmas traditions. We used to do an advent calendar growing up. So, like, every day we would pull something off this little advent calendar that we had, whether it be candy, whether it be a car, like a Hot Wheels car, something like that. That was a good memory. Christmas Eve, we would always come to, well, we started coming to High Point services on Christmas Eve. And then we used to go out to dinner, and now we do like a Hispanic themed, because we have an aunt that's from Colombia. And so we do like Hispanic themed food on Christmas Eve, which is so good, so good. And then Christmas morning, when I was little, we used to wake up at like 5 a.m., which now I'm like, I'll take all the sleep I can get now. But when I was little, I used to get up at 5 a.m., and my dad had already been, like, going through his whole day, because he gets up at 4 every day. And we would just get up, and we'd run downstairs, because we knew that our presents from Santa were just going to be sitting there, and they're going to be waiting for us. And I'm sure that, like me, you guys have a lot of traditions with your family, with your kids, with your parents, even with your friends. Like, we all have these really great Christmas traditions that we like to have down in the holiday time. And there, I was thinking about it this week. There's like a lot of weird things that we do, that everybody does, whether or not they are a Christ follower, that we do in the Christmas season. If you think about it, there's a guy that comes down our chimney with a beard, and he leaves presents for us. We put up a tree inside of our house, and we decorate it with all these like different lights and stuff. We decorate the outside of our house with Christmas lights. There's just a lot of weird things that if you think about it, that, like, they're kind of weird. They're kind of different. And the thing is that they're all fun. It's part of the season. It's part of the tradition and part of the holidays. But when you look at the story of Christmas in the Bible, there are actually a few things that we think that we kind of have this mindset of this is the way it happened that may not have actually happened the way that we think. And so that's what I want to do today is I want to look at three different Christmas myths this morning. And my hopes are, like, it's great, it's all fun looking at the myths, but my hope is that when we look at these Christmas myths, that it will help to sharpen our focus on the one truth, the ultimate and the big truth of Christmas, and that's Jesus. So what I want to do today is I just want to start off by reading you guys the Christmas story. And we're going to open up, if you have your apps, your Bibles, I don't know what you guys use. The kids use their apps. You're not that much older than them. But we're gonna open up to the book of Luke, and we're going to go to chapter 2. And I'm going to be using the New Living Translation. I don't know what you guys are going to be using, but we'll have it up on the screen if you want to follow along. So we're going to start at verse 1 in chapter 2. It says, "At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for the census. And because Joseph was descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. He took with him Mary, to whom he was engaged, who was now expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born. She gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them." So that's kind of the basics. That's not the whole Christmas story. Obviously, there's more to it. But that's just kind of the basics of how it started. And we see that in the book of Luke. And so I feel like we have this idea of what Jesus' birth looked like, the exact like replica of what it looked like because of the nativity scene. And so what I did is I brought a couple of pictures in for you guys. If you don't know what a nativity scene is, I wanted to show you guys a couple of pictures of what that might look like. So go ahead and roll the first one up. Is it up there? So this is, by the way, these are supposed to be funny, by the way. This is if Jesus' mom and dad were babies, this is what Jesus would look like. So this is one. Go ahead and roll to the next one. Those are dogs. Those are dogs. I have a dog and I love him so much. next one. That is the meat lover's nativity scene. Next. The moose. This is the Eatonville moose Christmas nativity scene. And next. Pigs. That's weird. That's so weird. Next. And Jesus in shotgun shells. That's so weird. Who would do that? I think that's it, right? One more? Oh, this is zombie Christmas. Zombie Christmas. I went to a website and I typed in weird nativity scenes and there are thousands of them out there like this. We could do this all morning if we wanted to. But I know it's all fun and games, but we kind of have this idea of what Christmas looks like because of the nativity scene. You know, at my mom and dad's house, there's one, it's sitting on top of the piano, and it's like this really nice HGTV, like Chip and Joanna, like they designed it, like it's super cool. You know, Jesus is sitting under a barn, there's cows, there's sheep, there's all this going on. Like we have this idea of that's what the nativity scene is in our mind. But the thing is that when we read the Christmas story, we see our first myth. And by myth, I'm saying like it may have happened the way that we think, but it doesn't actually say here in the Bible exactly where Jesus was born. And so the first myth that we're going to look at is, was Jesus actually born in a stable? Because that's kind of the idea that we had is Jesus, you know, we see the nativity scene. Oh, he must have been born in a stable, right? But, you know, if we read that passage in Luke, it just says that there was no lodging available for them. That, you know, she had the baby and she wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth. It doesn't say that they were in a stable or that they were in a barn. And I read through some different translations just to see like, oh, you know, what do different translations like the Message, NIV, NLT, what do these have to say about it? And they don't actually specifically say that Jesus was born in a stable. And so I think the idea and the story that I've heard, and I'm sure a lot of you heard if you grew up in church like myself, is that, you know, Mary was pregnant with Jesus. And so she and Joseph, they had to go back to Bethlehem because there was a census. And if you think about it, they probably didn't travel very fast because Mary was pregnant. And for those of you that have had children, you know, you had to take a rest. And so it may have taken them a while to get to Bethlehem. And so by the time they got to Bethlehem, you know, we see there was no lodging available for them. And typically the story that I've believed is that there is like an innkeeper and they go to the inn and the innkeeper's like, oh, there's no room at the Hilton. You got to leave and go find somewhere else to stay. Like that's the story that I've heard. But the thing is, when we read it, it doesn't specifically say that. And so what actually happened? Well, I think that's something that we don't know. It's something that we don't specifically know. Where was Jesus born? Was he born in a stable? Was he born in a cave? It's something that it's not made clear to us right now. And so I think something that may have happened is that when they got to Bethlehem, they went and they found their family. They went to look, you know, because obviously they were going back for a census. And so they may have gone to stay with their family. And there was no room for them. So they may have ended up in a stable. It's very possible. They could have ended up in something that resembled a cave, something where maybe the shepherds would come to take shelter. One key in that is it says that, you know, Jesus was laid in a manger. And so because he was laid in a manger, it probably meant that there were animals around somewhere. And so it's possible it was a stable. It's possible it was a cave. It's also possible that they went to a home of a family member and there was no room, like there was no guest room available for them. And so they ended up having to stay in something like a main room, and there was actually an animal trough there where they laid Jesus. So this is myth number one. It's kind of a question of where was Jesus born? It doesn't specifically say that in Luke, where he was born. And so it's kind of up to us right now to look at that. Like, God, you know, is this something that is an essential, or is this something that's just a part of the Christmas story that we don't know about right now? And so that's myth number one that I wanted to look at was Jesus born in a stable? And myth number two has to do with these guys called the wise men, or the kings. You know, you have that story. The way that I learned the song growing up was like, we three kings, something about like they smoked a rubber cigar, it exploded, and they're on that star. Have you guys heard that before? That's what we're teaching your kids in there, by the way. No, just kidding. We're not doing that. I would never do. My dad taught that to me. Love you. Threw him under the bus. But we have this idea of there were three guys that traveled to Bethlehem to see Jesus when he was born. That's kind of what we're taught, you know, and we see the nativity scene that we showed, and we see that there's three wise men that are sitting there with Jesus. But what I want to do is I want to flip to the book of Matthew, and I want to read you a part of the Christmas story from the book of Matthew. And so we're going to flip over to Matthew chapter 2. We're going to start at verse 1. It says, Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him. King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. He called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, where is the Messiah supposed to be born? So we're going to skip ahead to verse 9 now. It says, after this interview, the wise men went their way, and the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasure chests and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So that's kind of the story from Matthew of these wise men. And so what I learned growing up in church is I learned that there were these three wise men, and they went to the king, and they were looking for Jesus. And so, you know, and then all of a sudden this huge bright star showed up over where Jesus was born, and they followed that star to him. And there were three of them. And then when they showed up, there was the gold, the frankincense, and the myrrh. And so they just gave that as a gift to Jesus. And that's the story that I was taught, and I'm sure a lot of you heard a very similar story. But the myth that I want to look at here is, how many wise men were there? Because I've been taught that traditionally there were three. That's what I've always believed. But if we read this story, it doesn't actually say there were three wise men. It just says there were three gifts. And I think that because it says there were three gifts, we just kind of assume that, oh, there must have been three wise men. But the thing is that it doesn't say that when they got to Jesus that there were three. There may have been two. There may have been three because there were three gifts. There may have been 500. We don't actually know how many there were. And so what I think the story of the wise men looked like is, you know, they went to Herod, like it says in Matthew, and they talked to him, and then they wanted to find Jesus. And these were really wise. They were wise guys, like, not like Curly Moe and Larry. They were like They're intelligent guys. And so what they may have been like an astronomer because there was a star and they were looking for Jesus. And so they followed that star and they showed up, however many of them there were, and they gave the gifts to Jesus. But that's myth number two, is that we don't actually know. It doesn't specifically say there were three wise men. There may have been two, there may have been three, there may have been a million. We don't actually know that. And so we're going to move on to the third myth here. The third myth has to do with the date that Jesus was born. And traditionally, I think we all celebrate December 25th as the date that Jesus was born. That was the day that he was born. But like the other myths, the Bible doesn't specifically say Jesus was born December 25th, blah, yada, yada, year. It's not clear on the date. But there is one clue that we can look at in the Bible that kind of gives us a hint of maybe when Jesus was born, like maybe the season that he was born in. And so we're going to flip back to the book of Luke. We're going to go to Luke 2 again, and we're going to read verses 8 through 12. It says, "That night there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. Suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them. They were terrified, but the angel reassured them. 'Do not be afraid,' he said. 'I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all people. The Savior, yes, the Messiah, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David. And you will recognize him by this sign. You will find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth, lying in a manger.'" And I know reading that, it's kind of like, how do we find a clue from that? But the clue comes when we look at the shepherds. And it says, "That night, there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep." And so one thought, just in history, just a historical thought, is that because the shepherds were out with their sheep, it may not have been in the winter. It may have been a time of year where the weather was better, where they were out with their sheep, the weather was great, you know, they were soaking in the sun. That is an indication that it may have happened. It could have been in the spring, it could have been in the summer, but it doesn't specifically say Jesus was born on December 25th. So how did Christmas come about? There was one thought, and it's a pretty strong thought, that in the early, like, second century, there was actually a pagan holiday that was going on. It was a celebration of the winter solstice. And it wasn't exactly like your mom's holiday. Like, it was not like a holiday you really wanted to participate in if you were a Christ follower. It was, you know, they were worshiping idols, things like that, where it was just like the Christians, they wanted to stay away from what was going on. The Christ followers wanted to stay away from what was going on. And so somewhere around like the third or fourth century, it's thought that the Christians, they wanted to counter this winter solstice, this pagan holiday, and they wanted to counter it. So they decided, we're going to celebrate the birth of Jesus. We want to pick a day where we just say, we're going to celebrate all that God has given us, and we're going to celebrate his son. And that's kind of one thought of how Christmas came to be about on December 25th. But the thing about these three myths, the stable, the wise men, the date that Jesus was born, the thing about these is that they're non-essentials. They're fun to think about. They're great to think about. And they're important. They're a great part of the story. But when it comes to our eternity, they're non-essentials, because God's not going to be like, oh, you think that there were three wise men? Like, boom, lightning bolt, you're gone. You know, he's not going to block you from getting into heaven if, you know, you think that, like, Jesus was born in a cave rather than a stable. Like, those are things that they're non-essentials. But when we look at the Christmas story as a whole, throughout all of these myths, there's one truth. And that truth is, it's really hit on in the book of John. In John 1:14, it says, "So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. And when we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son." And so throughout Christmas, like, we have these great traditions. They're so fun. I love setting up the tree. I love spending time with my wife. Like, we have so many fun things that we do in the Christmas season. But despite whether or not Santa is, he is real, despite, you know, how many wise men there were, you know, if Jesus was born in a stable, there is one truth above everything that happened in the Christmas story that we need to hone in on and focus on. And that's that Jesus Christ became flesh. God became a human so that he could give us the ultimate gift, so that he could be born specifically to die for each and every single one of us on this planet. And that's what I want to do this Christmas season. I'm going to give you a little bit of homework here, but I just want us to take a step back. You know, I was talking to my wife about a week or two ago, and we're looking at the month of December, and we were looking at everything that we had going on in December. And I just said to her, I was like, if we don't slow down, if we don't stop, then it's going to be January 1st, and we're not even going to know what happened. Like, we're not even going to take time to really celebrate what this season is all about. And that's the truth that Jesus Christ was born. And so I want to give you guys a little bit of homework this morning, something to do. It doesn't have to be today. It doesn't have to be this week. It's sometime during this Christmas season. I want to give you guys a little bit of homework. And so the first one is for you as an individual. And what I want you to do is I want you to ruin Christmas, or, ooh, that was, to ruin the secular part of Christmas with Jesus. And here's how you do that. What I want is I want us, you, myself included, to ruin the secular part of Christmas by thinking every time I see something like a Christmas tree, every time I see Christmas lights, every time I see Santa at the mall and the kids are screaming and I want to get out of there, like every time you see that, stop, take a moment and pause and just reflect and think that without Jesus, without God sending his son, like this may not be here, like this may not be happening. Stop, pause, and take a moment to reflect on the one truth. Allow every element of Christmas to point right back to Jesus. And my second piece of homework for you guys is for those of you that have friends or have family that you spend a lot of time with at Christmas. And it's a little bit different. I don't know if you guys pray together with your family or not. Some do, some don't. But I've come to learn that it's so important to pray together as a family, to communicate, to talk to God as a family. And so the second piece of homework is for those of you that are spending time with your family, even with your friends that maybe you consider family, is take some time this Christmas season to pray together. And specifically to pray that we can slow down, that we can slow down through the craziness of everything that happens. And we can just pause and reflect. But also praying that despite the myths, despite the traditions, that we can focus in on the one true truth of Christmas. And that's that Jesus Christ was born to save every single one of us. And so what I want to do is I just want to finish up by praying for you guys, for praying for all of us as we go into this Christmas season. God, we're so thankful for a place that we can come, for a school where we can come together as a church family and we can worship you. I just pray for each of us in this room and for those that aren't here today with us, that throughout this Christmas season, with everything that goes on, that we can just take a moment and we can pause, we can reflect on you, and that we can be so thankful for all that you've given us, for the life that you've given us, and for the opportunity that you've given us to spend our eternity with you. We're so thankful that you died, that you took so much for us, and we just ask that you'd be with us as we go out into this Christmas season. We pray this prayer in your name. Amen.